You're listening to This Is How We See It with your host, Eric Lee, the show where we say it like we see it.
Thanks for tuning in to the show. Welcome to it. My name is Eric Lee, and in the studio with me is Miss C.
Hello.
We've got two special guests today, ladies and gentlemen, here to help us talk about our topic. And say hello to Tasha and Wendy.
Hi.
All right. So today's topic is about drug addiction. I don't think we've ever done a show about drug addiction before, but it certainly affects a lot of people. And so I kind of wanted to hear firsthand about, because Tasha, Wendy, you two actually lived that life.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
You two, you know, really know what it is that you're talking about when we talk about drug addiction.
True indeed, yes.
So we are going to hear from you a little bit later on in the show. You're just going to tell us your story. Right now, I just want to give a little stats on drug addiction. Drug addiction is defined by the existence of both psychological dependence and physical dependence on at least one illicit substance. Marijuana, cocaine, crystal meth, heroin, synthetic drugs, and even prescription drugs that may be effective medically or highly addictive. There are a number of reasons why someone may develop an addiction. When you are unable to stop using your drug of choice, despite a desire to live without addiction, when you experience physical withdrawal symptoms, when you attempt to stop getting high, when you crave your drug of choice and obsess about getting more, these are just a few characteristics of drug addiction. Do you guys agree with
yes.
that?
Yes.
Because it is a medical disorder, it is recommended that those that are diagnosed with the disease get immediate treatment that includes medical detox and psychotherapeutic treatment. What are the signs of drug addictions? Now, I know signs differ for, you know, different people. You know, everybody's not the same on anything. But depending on your substance of choice, the signs of being under the influence will vary. But drug addiction can create a number of problems that are common to all who live with the issue. And these include hiding substance abuse,
yes.
lying about substances used
yes.
or the amount
yes.
of the drug used, violent or erratic behavior,
yes.
extreme mood swings,
true.
Complaints of physical illness.
Yes.
I think that's mostly for like prescription, you know, because, you know, Wendy, you and I were talking about that a little bit earlier, and we'll talk about prescription. But, you know, there are a lot of people who really don't know. They think that because it's not like the hard drugs,
but it is.
It absolutely is.
You can be addicted to a lot of things.
You can be addicted mm-hmm. to a lot of things. So we'll talk about that. Continued use of drugs despite negative consequences, inability to maintain employment or function well at work, rationalizing drug use despite consequences,
yes.
inability to remain clean and sober for any length of time, disruptive sleeping and eating patterns,
yes.
And choosing to get high over other activities.
Yes.
Okay. All right. what are the risk factors for drug addiction? Now, this is an ongoing debate in the medical community, but it is generally agreed that there is no one cause for the development of addiction. Because, you know, even me myself, like, I always wonder, like why do some people, you know, get, you know, addicted to, or what causes it?
People don't understand that when you start getting high, the first time that you get, the only time that you get high is the first time that you get high. All else is you chasing a ghost. So people get addicted the first time.
Yeah, they keep using, trying to get that first high that they got, but you never get that.
You only get it that first time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're saying that the only time you get high is the first time, you don't get high any other time?
You get high, but you don't get that high that you get the first time.
So let's just start. I don't know who wants to go first, either Tasha or Wendy. I want you to tell us, first of all, what was your drug and how did you start using that drug?
Okay. Well, my first drug was marijuana. A lot of folks around me were doing it in my family, and, you know, I just saw it around my friends. Everybody was doing it, so it was just popular. You see it on TV. You know, you it's like the limelight. You want to see it. I mean, you see it, and then you want to do it. You know, you want to be like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And then it seemed like as I was getting older and as time was going on, marijuana, it wasn't getting you there. It wasn't getting me there.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I remember going to a party one night. I was dating someone at the time, and I saw them using this white substance, and it was kind of looked like flour. I didn't know what it was, but they told me it was cocaine. Some people would they say, you know, lace it. Some people would snort it. I don't know. I when I saw it, it was I was already introduced to a drug, so I'm like, why not? You know, so I started that, and I was doing it for a while. I was working, I had children, I was going to school, and then it seemed like the more I kept doing it, the worse it got. I lost everything in a blink of an eye. When I started losing everything, it seemed like the sniffing powder wasn't enough. So someone introduced me, was a family member, introduced me to what they call crack cocaine. And I remember it. It was scary. Then it was exciting at the same time. That rush you get, you can never, there's nothing like it, in other words. And when that started, it was just complete downhill from there on.
So the crack cocaine gave you a different high than your first time drug, which was marijuana. And then you got another different high from just doing the coke.
Doing a coke.
Okay, mm-hmm. So is the crack cocaine and coke the same thing? Or what's the difference between the coke and the crack cocaine?
Well, the difference is the cocaine itself is powdery, and then what you do is you mix it with like baking soda, and you cook it, and it becomes a hard substance.
Right,
and that's crack.
And now, that's what they call crack.
Now, I think the difference, excuse me, but I think the difference is the freebasing is the difference. The difference is
now what is freebasing?
It's when we smoke it, we put the fat to it, and we smoke. When you put the fat to it and you smoke, you know, snorting is like it's going into
right,
your nose.
Going into your nose, right?
It's mm-hmm. it's a rush, but when we freebase, we lighten it up,
we put some fire on it, and we put it to our mouth,
mm-hmm. and we take it in the vapors.
So cocaine. And crack cocaine is the same thing, but it's in a different form.
Yes, ma'am.
But yeah. It is the same thing.
Yes, it is.
Same thing.
That's why they call crack rocks, because it's like little rocks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's hardened when they mix it with whatever it is.
So you don't call cocaine the powder kind. You don't call that crack?
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, Tasha, you started... with weed, and isn't that kind of what a lot of people start with? Because I've heard a lot that weed is a gateway drug.
Yeah, it is.
It's like most people, you know, when if they have substance abuse, it's always they start with weed
start
first.
With
weed.
Yes, they start with some other drug first, mm-hmm. and then it goes higher because you want to get that higher high. Mm-hmm.
Don't they call marijuana community drug.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I mean,
it's all around the community.
Yeah, it's everywhere, right. And then you know you talk about Tasha did you say that you started lacing your weed?
I tried that once. It didn't do too much for me. It was just like after smoking marijuana. But when I did the sniffing, when I sniffed it, it was a different rush. And I was alert. Everything was,
yeah,
you know, yeah. So that's where that started. And I started the group of friends that I started hanging around that was really just doing what they call the community drug, marijuana. Mm-hmm. They started seeing a difference in me, and they're like, you know, I can't hang. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to hang with them either. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to be distance, and I wanted to hang with people that like to do what I did.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the same crowd left, and you also start finding yourself being by yourself.
Actually, you want to be by yourself.
You want to be by yourself.
You don't have to share that drug with nobody.
Yeah, you know, you start distancing yourself from family. And then, you know, if you're working, you know, you're not performing well at work. You're not performing well in school. You're not being a good parent to your kids. But you don't see that, but people around you do.
And that's a question that I wanted to ask is, and it's one of the questions that I have. I guess I can ask it now. Was there ever a time when you said to yourself, I'm addicted? Or did you never, ever say that? Did you always think, oh, you know, or did you at some point know, you know what, this has got a hold on me?
When you're doing the drug, for me, when I was doing the drug, I mean, I thought something was wrong with everybody else.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't me. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't own none of that.
Yeah.
You know, everything mm-hmm. that happened in my life and whether it was good or bad, whether it was mainly bad, but I didn't think nothing was wrong with me.
You didn't think anything was wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. You know, but it was something wrong with everybody else.
And that's the illusion. When I did my research, just that what you just said is a lot of people say that.
But when we realize that it's us, we know that we can get clean.
When we realize
it's us, that's when we know that we can get clean. Mm-hmm. Long as we're in denial, we'll never get clean. And another thing, we have to get clean for ourselves. Yeah, we can't get clean for anybody else.
That's right.
Why don't you, Wendy? Why don't you tell us tell us your story?
Hi, I'm Wendy.
Hey, Wendy.
You know, for me, I think I first started when I was like 25. My grandmother passed, and I thought that my world was shattered. I started hanging with different people, and weed was my drug of choice at first. My first little girl's dad, and we used to smoke together. And after a while, weed didn't do nothing for me. So I had to go to something else. I moved. I was doing good. Had a nice job. And all of a sudden, I was introduced to the thing they call crack cocaine. Went out one night looking for some weed and ended up buying some crack. And we started getting high from there.
So unlike Tasha, she said she laced one time. And no. She said, so you went straight from weed
straight to crack.
Because they didn't have what you were looking for.
They didn't have what I was looking for. But the person that I was with, she was already out there addicted, mm-hmm. and she knew. Mm-hmm. So that was her way of pulling me in so that she could get high. You know, because if you spending your money getting high, hey, I'm going to get high. You ain't going to want to get high by yourself all the time.
So, Tasha, yours was a boyfriend, you said.
Yeah, the boyfriend started me because when I met him, he was smoking weed. Uh-huh. My first love.
The boyfriend or the weed?
The boyfriend first. And then whatever he did, I wanted to do. So it kind of led to that.
And so, Wendy, yours was a friend. Yours was just a platonic friend.
Just a friend.
And did you have any idea that she was doing it? Or you?
No.
You didn't know she was?
No, didn't know she was getting high. Mm-hmm. And from then on, you know, things began to go downhill. I didn't want to work. All I wanted to do was get high. Didn't want to tend to my kids. It was just get high, get high, get high.
Mm-hmm. So you went looking for weed.
Right.
But then they didn't have that. So then she said, well, let's try this. Did you know? Let me ask the two of you questions. Because, see, a lot of people are thinking this. And I know that they're going to be thinking this. Did you not know what it was? Like what was it that made you You know what I mean? Like, you had to have known what it was. But what was it that made you do it anyway?
I think for me, it was more just wanting to be in the in crowd. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's peer pressure. Mm-hmm. I was a good kid. I was smart, mm-hmm. on a roll. Mm-hmm. I mean, I skipped a grade. I went straight to the 12th grade. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was smart. Right.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I knew what crack was.
Hold on, Wendy. I'll let you finish that story. We have got to take a break. We'll be right back in a moment. You are listening to This Is How We See It. We are back. Thanks for coming back with us, talking today about drug addiction. And before we went to break, I was asking Wendy and Tasha, what was it that made you, even though you knew about it, or did you not know about, for instance, Wendy, when your friend said, here, try this, did you not know that it was crack? Did you not know that, what was it that made you do it anyway?
I just did it.
I
just wanted to get high.
Is it true, because I hear some people say this, is it true that you always think it'll never happen to me?
Right, exactly.
Yes, definitely. Yes,
exactly.
And that's why a lot of people do it anyway, because they think I'm strong-willed, I can beat this.
Exactly.
And brother. But as we know, a lot of people say that, but they end up, doing total opposite.
You never think that's going to happen to you. You're going to get addicted, but you do.
Yeah.
So you did it, and you just said that it just went down for you from there.
From there. Yes.
May I ask a question, please?
Yes.
Before you ever did the drugs, everybody, like I said, was reefer was the community drug. But before you ever did the other drug, cocaine, crack, whatever, did you already know somebody or a family member that was already on that stuff,
that was my question.
And then you know how it did them, So before you even did that, did it even click in your head to say, now this person's on it and they are really doing bad and stuff, so I don't want to do that? Or is it your thing? It might happen to them, but my willpower was stronger than that. That's not going to happen to me because I can handle it.
Well, sometimes, yes, you say that to yourself, and you knowing that someone in your family has went down that road, mm-hmm. but you also you say to yourself sometimes, it's not going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. it does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Tasha was saying that she had children. You, too, had children as well.
I had two daughters. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what happened? Like, how did you?
I had two daughters. At the time, one was 5 months. And the other was, I think she was like 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. And I went from not buying milk to not buying Pampers, using what I could. But out of my addiction, the good thing was my kids, mm-hmm. that I placed them somewhere, mm-hmm. so that my kids could have a life and grow up. And I can say this, I thank God for the people that was in my life at the time. Mm-hmm. When we're getting high, we think everybody's our enemy.
Yeah.
Everybody's our enemy, but everybody's not your enemy,
Like Tasha said, everybody crazy but me. y'all the one with the problem. I ain't got the problem.
Mm-hmm. And I that's the good thing, that I did for my kids.
And you put one child with your aunt.
Yes, I did.
The youngest one with your aunt, right. And then the older one went to her father. Right. What about you, Tasha? What happened to your children?
I had two at the time. I had a son and a daughter. Both of them first went to my parents. And then the paternity parents of my daughter, mm-hmm. had came and got her. So my son stayed with my mom and dad. And then after a while, he would just go back and forth with his dad's parents and my parents.
And that's got to be a blessing, you know, because you see a lot of addicted parents leave their children in the house for weeks and days at a time, you know, by themselves. And it was good that you guys at least, you know, placed your children somewhere.
Even in addiction, a good parent will place your kids somewhere so they can be well taken care of. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got people out here that's getting high. They get high with their kids.
That's what I mean, in the room.
And they get high with them in the room instead of placing them somewhere.
Right? I was looking at Grey's Anatomy, one of the repeats of Grey's Anatomy, and this father brought his son into the ER. He didn't know what was wrong with him. The son wouldn't stop crying. He wouldn't go to sleep. He wouldn't. Well, come to find out, they were meth. They had a meth lab in the house, and the son was crawling in the meth, and he was inhaling the fumes. And that was the reason that they and the house blew up is what happened, really. And I think the wife died. I think she died. And so, you know, listening to you say that about, you know, some parents do that stuff, you know, with children in the house. So you place them where, you know, with people that could take care of them.
And then, you know, I was out there and things got worse and worse. You know, I could, you know, when you're getting high, you think that everybody's crazy but you, as Tasha said. But you're the one that's crazy, really.
Sure. Really. Yeah.
You're the one that's crazy because you begin to lie, you begin to cheat, you begin to steal, you begin to do all kinds of stuff just to get high. Just to get high. And, you know, I thank God that I'm here today.
Amen.
17 years clean.
Clean
I thank
and
God's clean and sober. Mm-hmm. And ain't the devil in hell going to take me back.
Well, I'm glad. I am glad about that. I've heard people say that some people are functioning addicts. Is that real?
Yes,
is that a real
true
thing?
Yes, it's true. Yes. That's true. Yeah.
See,
that's true.
I don't believe that. So tell me how somebody can be a functioning addict.
I had an ex. We had been married for 20 something years, and that was why I did not know he was on.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Was he a functioning addict,
yes,
or had he not been in the throes of addiction long enough?
No, he was in there a while. He was a functioning addict because he had to go to work to pay for his drugs. Now, that was one thing that he did. He never missed a day off from work. He went to work every day, sometime high as Cootie Brown. But he went to work because he had to have money.
Support that habit.
To support that habit.
And yeah, it's true indeed.
So he was a functioning
addict. There are
functioning
addicts. If you know, got some ads, they have to smoke a blunt before they get up out the bed just
and
to
go
function
to work. Yeah.
You have some people have to take 4 or 5 pills before they get up.
Yeah.
Some people, that before they get in a job, they have to take a hit of crack. So there's functioning addicts and go on beyond their day. Just like, and you couldn't tell it. But one thing about it, one addict knows another addict.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Talk to us about the guilt and shame of addiction. I hear some people say, you know, that's the reason why they shy away from family and friends. I heard you, Tasha, talk about you shied away from your friends. Talk about the guilt.
Well, my ex said he had been on it for years.
Okay. And with you, still married to you for years.
Yeah.
I did not
know it. I did not know it because nothing really changed about him, except one time I really looked at him and he was losing weight, you know? And I told him, I said, you're losing weight. And he said, no, I'm not. He said, when people say I look good, I said, well, they're lying to you, because I can tell. I said, and it's just not a gradually weight loss. I said, it looks like it's, you know,
not a healthy weight
loss.
Mm-hmm.
And he still did not admit to me that was, you know, what he was doing. I knew he was smoking a lot of reefer, and I thought really that was what it was. I did not know about the other stuff, the hard stuff, until after we had separated.
Okay, so what did he tell you about the shame and guilt?
He told me that years later, after we had broke up, he told me that the reason why he got clean, and he did it himself, he didn't go to the hospitals or nothing like that, he did it himself. He said it hurt him so bad to see the people that he had helped along the way when they needed rent money, food and all that, the way they would look at him when they see him and label him as a crackhead.
Right. Oh,
wow. He said, and it hurt him so bad. He said that was gave him the
drive.
Yeah, the drive to get clean. And that was what he did. And he did it all by himself.
And we'll talk about getting clean later, but I want to hear from the two of you about shame and
I want to say this right here, that everybody, most people that start getting high, it's for some of us, it's something else. It's something the cause of us getting high. And I'm going to say it could be the loss of a family member. It could be you're not happy with yourself. It don't always have to be that we are crazy.
Escapism. Hear that word a lot when I talking to people. They say they want to escape. Right. But, they want to, you know.
But we escape for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's
only
right.
Only for a second.
Yeah, right.
Because the high is only like a 5-minute high.
Right.
Sometimes it ain't even that.
Right. Which is why you're always looking and after it.
And it's right back. And depression is the number one cause of most people to get a high. Mm-hmm. Depression. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They go, you know, they go to the doctor, and the doctor will give them all them pills and all this and that, and that, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So
I think more for me, it was. I came from a loving family. Mm-hmm. Like, I was spoiled rotten. I know that. I know that. And I think for me, it was more or less, of when I had my first child. The pain and the hurt. I disappointed, you know, a lot of people. I guess they had high expectations for me. I mean, that, and then along with the hard work that came with trying to be a single mom, I was in middle school when I had my child. I was in eighth grade. So I'm sitting here in the eighth grade when I had my son. So I'm sitting here, you know, trying to get it together. I just felt like I disappointed people, and I couldn't get that back.
And is that why you shied away from
I shied away. I started hanging around, you know, prom. I couldn't go to prom. I couldn't do a lot of stuff. And I was more or less beating myself up. I'm like, I'm going to get this. I want to do what other people doing. And that's what led, for me, I think what led me to, I guess, hanging around different crowds and you know, going on the right path.
Yeah, but you graduated from high school with honors and skipped the grade.
We'll talk about that more when we come back. We will be back in a moment. Stay right with us. We are back. Thanks for coming back with us, talking to Tasha, Wendy, and Miss C about drug addiction. And we were talking about the shame and the guilt of addiction, Tasha was telling us about. And that's one of the main reasons why drug addicts stay away from, they shun their family, because it really is, I guess hearing you guys say that, it could be, I want to do my drugs too. But it's also shame, though. Isn't it, though?
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes. It's a lot of shame. You know, even for me, I've been clean all these years. But sometimes when I get around my family members, I feel the black sheep.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You can't help but to feel that. You feel the black sheep because, you know, you're the one that went out there and did what you did, you know, and got on drugs.
You say you do or you did?
At times I do.
Still now,
to this day. And that's just me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it might not be like that.
Sure.
But it's just me.
And like, for what about your family? Like,
like
they're looking at you thinking, was she, like what?
Yeah. That, you know, sometimes she's the one that went out and she's the one that got high. She's the one that was in the street. You know, you never know what's going through a person's mind. That might be just me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wendy, you know what I think that is? And I'm not a doctor. What I think that is that you haven't forgiven yourself.
And that may be true. Mm-hmm. That may be true. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, and I haven't. To be honest, I haven't.
Well, you need to, because nobody else is thinking about
yes.
it.
And haven't forgiven yourself in what way?
My kids. Uh-huh. See, mm-hmm. let me get to why I haven't forgiven myself mm-hmm. about my kids. Because, see, I come from my mother got killed when I was 7.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents raised me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was given to my grandmother. She was 50 years old when she got me. She did the best she could. So that should have prompted me to be a better mother to my kids. And I struggle with that every day. Mm-hmm. Every day I struggle with that.
But does it come to the realization, do you come to the realization that I had a problem?
Yes.
And that is the reason why, you know, I wasn't able to be there for your kids. And not excusing your behavior or anything, but you know, I just kind of look at it a little bit different than, oh, I just abandoned my kids. You know what I mean? Like, some parents just, you know, right. They just abandoned their kids. But do you ever think about, well, you know what? I had a problem. It's fixed. And now let me move on.
Yes, at times I do. But then I often wonder if my kids have moved on.
I can relate.
Okay.
I can relate to that. I'm just now getting, well, I've had custody of, well, I had custody, but I didn't have custody. In other words, I had problems with my daughter's side of family.
How did they look at you?
How you know, but see, now they can't say nothing about me. Mm-hmm. They can't say nothing. Mm-hmm. That's what get me through the day. And then, like, when I first got my kids back, my daughter was the one that I had the roughest time with.
Because she remembers.
She remembers, and she had some people, her grandparents
sure.
were, they didn't make it no better.
Sure.
It wasn't like mm-hmm. they were praising me.
They kept it fresh
they
in her
kept
mind.
It fresh in her mind. Mm-hmm. And sometimes she walks around, you know, with this attitude that mm-hmm. you owe me.
Like, yes.
You've been
yes.
you owe me.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, you know what? You know, my father, he forgave me. I forgive myself. And each day, you know, I can understand. You have those feelings, but
sure.
that ain't nothing but the devil.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the devil.
Exactly.
So, you know, at the end of the day, can't you know, what can you say now? You know, I'm living for him. I'm living for my kids. And each day it gets better. It'll be 6 years for me in December.
And what did you tell her? Like what did you, have you had a conversation with her about it or?
Yeah, when the court gave us me visitations, I was staying with my parents at the time, and I made it my duty to have that talk with her when she first came.
How old was she?
She was 8 years old, 7 years old She was 10 years old.
Okay.
When we had that conversation, and I just told her, I'm not gonna make up any excuses. You know, Mama was sick.
Mm-hmm.
Mama was going through some things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sorry, Mama abandoned you. Mm-hmm. I just know I always loved you. I
sure.
always thought about you every day.
Sure.
But this is something that I got, that I'm going through, and I'm going to get through it. You know,
no matter what we tell our kids, some of them often feel like we did abandon them.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
No
matter it's understandable.
And we did abandon them.
That they would feel that way. And what did you, Wendy, what did you, have you had a conversation with yours about, you know,
yes,
about what happened?
I mm-hmm. have. I've had a conversation with my oldest daughter. My oldest daughter and I always been a little tighter than my baby girl. My baby girl's always been tighter with my aunt. And that's a good thing. That's really a good thing. I don't think my baby girl has forgiven me.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest girl has.
Mm-hmm.
She has.
Sure.
We've had that conversation. My baby girl and I have had that conversation.
Sure.
But truly, I don't feel like that she has, mm-hmm. you know, forgiven me. And that's something that I struggle with.
And why do you feel like she hasn't? Like, does she say something? Or why do you feel that she hasn't forgiven you? Or is it you?
It may be me.
Because you said that you placed her when she was like 4 or 5 months old. Mm-hmm. So she didn't go through anything with you, you know, as far as remembering, well, she left me to do this or she left me with somebody. She shouldn't remember any of that. Well, she don't. And now you say she's what, like 24, 23?
23. Well, yeah, she can probably, well, how old was she?
She was 5 months
old. Oh, 5 months.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's not like she doesn't know.
Well, she probably does. I mean, from us talking earlier, you know, she probably does know. But the things that she know, you said, the things that she know is only what family members would tell her. I don't think now. I think your older child might remember more so than this baby, you know, than this baby
she
girl.
Does.
Mm-hmm. And I could see if the older child would probably like miss you, you know, coming up. When you first gave her to her father, she might would miss you because you were present in her life every day.
Well,
you know, but the baby girl never really stayed with you.
Well,
know?
I long for my mother every day of my life, and she didn't raise me.
Yeah, but you knew your mother. You said you were 7 years old when she died?
Yeah.
Okay, but you knew her.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I didn't know her.
Okay, so we're saying the baby girl really didn't know you. It was only from family members. And as she got bigger, she was introduced, which you had told me, you know, that you used to go to your aunt's house a lot, even during the time of your addiction.
Right.
You were gone. So she always knew that you were her mother, even though her aunt raised her, and she calls her aunt Mama.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But she still knew, you know, who you were.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I just lost my train of thought. I just had it. Just came
and
in
I
my
think
head.
I think what I started to say was that Tasha and Wendy, you're saying that you all abandoned your kids. That was what you were saying. You placing them somewhere to make sure that they are taken care of, to me, that's me, is not an abandonment. It's not, because you made sure that they were taken care of. You didn't leave them in a house somewhere and social service or somebody came in and got those kids.
Well,
you made sure those children were placed.
That's true.
Yes. That's being a mother.
That's true.
That's true. That's true.
That is true. Yeah.
Let me ask you, Wendy, I asked Tasha this question. Did you ever come to the realization that you were addicted? Like, did you ever say, or were you like Wendy thinking Tasha, everybody else was crazy? Did you ever say, you know what?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. When, I was, sent to prison, my mind got clean and I knew that I had a problem. That's the first time I knew I had a problem. No one else had a problem but me. See, first you got to sit down and get this clean first.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get that clean to be the thing. Because when we cloud it here, we can't think. So
I heard you can get drugs in prison just like you can on the streets. That true?
That's true.
That's true.
That's true.
That's true.
That's true.
How many times did either of you go to rehab, or did you ever, ever go to rehab? How many? Both, I wish y'all could see them in the studio.
And I went about 10 times.
10 times.
But each time I went for something else. I didn't go for me. See, when you go for yourself is when you get clean. When you go, when you say, okay, I'm going for me.
And how did you go for some, what do you mean? Like a court order or something?
Court order, or I'm going so I can get clean for my kids. It don't work.
It don't work that way.
It don't work
you
that way.
You got to go for you.
Tasha, Wendy, I remember you told me one time that your aunt and uncle took you to the rehab and they all three of you walked in together. Well, they sat down and they were talking to the doctor and sat there for a while. So then you said, your aunt said to the doctor, well, let's go and get Wendy. And the doctor said, when you all walked in together, she kept right on going and went out the back
and
door.
And that is true. See, I didn't go for me. I went for aunt and uncle and my children.
And so the aunt asked the doctor, well, why were we sitting here? He said, because it's a family thing. That if she's addicted, you all are addicted too, because a lot of times you enable.
Yes. But you know what? That's true. But also, when we're addicts, we hurt ourselves, but also we hurt the people that surround us.
And that's the truth.
Yes.
And how about you, Tasha? How many times did you seek rehab? Mm.
I can't even count.
So it never worked. Did rehab ever work?
No. Like the programs they got now, they need to be.
It's a minor matter thing.
They need to be redone. They need to be reorganized, restructured. Cause like the programs now, it's like a party. Yeah. It's not even.
Ooh. It's a mind thing. It's really not about going into these classes. It is a mind thing because once you get right in your mind and say look, and look at yourself in the mirror, and that person in the mirror looking back, and you are skinny. You look like you're malnutrition. Your hair done came out. Your dirty clothes are sucked in. And you got on dirty clothes. And you ain't took a bath in 5 years. And say, hey, enough is enough.
Talk to us about how should family, I would imagine that a lot of addicts, families enable a lot of acts.
Yes.
Was your family at all? Did you ever feel that they enabled you, or do you not feel that they enabled you?
I remember sometimes when I was out in the street, you know, I would call my mama and say, "Mama, you got $10 or you got $15?" And she would have to sneak it to me because if my daddy found out,
okay,
you know.
I would get cold and hungry and go to my aunt's house and sleep on her couch and sleep for days laying there. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had a loving aunt. Mm-hmm. I have two aunts on my mom's side, but I had a loving aunt to tell that aunt, "Hey, you enabling her, you letting her come to your house." But this, both aunts love me, but this aunt right here had, you know, this was a rock right here, so. I figured I could go to her house, you know. But the minute that she stopped me from coming there, I had no crutch.
Yeah.
See, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
So I had to do something else.
That's what I mean.
And everybody not going to let you just come and flip-flop in their house.
That's right.
You got to do something.
Yeah, she told you that the next time you step on that porch, you better be clean.
That's right. Yep. And the next time I came, I was coming home and I was clean. That's the last time I've been.
Yeah. How should families treat an addictive loved one?
With tough love, because it affects everybody around you,
right?
Not just you.
And that's what I always say: drug addiction is not just you. It's everybody around you. It's all the people that love you. That's also in it.
They're going through it with you. They just ain't smoking it. They're going through it with you.
Right.
They sit up countless nights
worrying about you,
riding up down the road, you know, using their gas, trying to find you. Every time they hear about a woman that's getting killed in the ditch somewhere, that's what they think about. Mm. But you know, I had a praying family.
Yes.
Woo,
yes. Yes.
As I tell you, you know, it's something when one of them pray that God send you to prison.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, somebody's going to kill you out here. I had a praying family.
We got to take a break. We'll be right back in just a moment. Stay right with us. We are back. Thanks for coming back with us. During the commercial break, Wendy just told a hilarious story about you have got to tell the story, Wendy.
Well, you know, I used to go by my aunt's house all the time, like I say, when I got hungry or I was cold and need to change clothes. So I went by there one afternoon and she came out of her room and said, "Wendy, what is wrong with your hair?" And I said, "Oh, I'm growing dreads."
Okay, but what was wrong with your
hair? It was mattered.
It looked mattered and mapped out. And you told her you were growing dreads.
I'm growing dreads. And she said, "Okay." So I sat there and went to sleep. And she said, "Come on, Wendy." And I got on up and I went in and got in the chair. I'm still, my head instead of dropping, I'm about to sleep. When I woke up, I had a brush cut.
She had cut all of your hair.
My hair.
How did you not feel her cutting your hair off?
You know,
You were just tired.
When you come down off those benches for 4 or 5 days, Your body shut down. You don't know nothing. And I sat there bobbing and carrying on. And when I woke up, I had a nice brush cut. People started asking me, where did you get your hair cut at? I said, in my mama's kitchen.
That is hilarious. That is hilarious. Let me ask the two of you this. What was it that made you say enough is enough? Because now, if you're both telling me that rehab didn't work for you, that means that you got stopped cold turkey.
No.
Oh, you didn't stop cold turkey. No. Okay.
For me, the night that I was thrown out of a car going 65 miles per hour.
You were thrown out of a car going 65 miles per hour.
60 miles per hour.
And that was
117 stitches in my head.
Oh, my. Oh my
117 stitches in my head. Had skin drafted from my butt to my face a little bit. My arms, my legs, they left me for dead. Thank God for a lady named Colleen Mert, which was, at the time, she was going with my cousin Howard Strickland. She got kids by Howard. And they were coming home down Garner Road and getting right there where Park Glen is. And she had a high beams on. And she looked to the left and saw a lady's foot hanging out of a ditch. When they pulled over, I was laying there, from what I've heard, lifeless, no clothes on, no nothing. They didn't even know who I was because my face was so swollen and I didn't have any skin. I knew when I went to the hospital and I got straight, and you know, this is the tough love that this aunt that I was telling you about gave me. You know how I used to getting sober, want to go home and lay on the couch and go home. But this particular day, I had that accident, and I came home, and she said, uh-uh. And that was the best thing, uh-uh. She can't come here. That made me straighten up and say, hey, I tried to get clean over and over and over, but that right there made me decide, hey, you got to do something. And shortly after, I went to prison.
And what did you do? Like, when you left there, what, did you just stay with friends?
Yeah, I stayed with friends and carried on until I got well. And I had decided I was on probation. And I decided I was going to turn myself in.
So you had this accident. Then you went to prison not too long after that.
Not too long after that.
And that's when you got clean.
That's when I got clean. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get clean. If they hadn't caught me, I was going to turn myself in anyway. Mm-hmm. Because I could have died. You know? She didn't have to. For some reason, at 3 o'clock in the morning, God sent her down that road to see my leg hanging.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
It saved my life.
That was divine intervention.
That's right. And they saved my life. So, God have gave me numerous chances, one after the other. Not only was a car when I was thrown out of the car, but I was beaten and choked unrecognized and left also. So, you know, it was a wake-up call for me.
What about you, Tasha? When was it that you said, you know what, this ain't working?
Well, when I was out there on the streets, I got pregnant, and after I'd been using for over 10 years, I didn't think I could have children, but for some particular reason, God had another plan. So I found I was pregnant. I was still using while I was pregnant. I had social services. They would send somebody to my house, and I was weaning myself off then. But what got me is when I had my daughter. I have three children now. When I had my baby, the CPS people came in and said, Ms. Lyons, you know, your daughter was tested positive for crack cocaine. Mm. Now, we're going to give you two options. If you feel like you can't do this or you don't want to do this, we're going to take her right now. You know, we have to by law. Or you can go be with some people, like your family, whatever, and we have someone come see you every week. That was the turnaround for me. It makes so bad. My baby looks just like my oldest daughter. Mm-hmm. And when I saw her, I knew I had to do something. I couldn't. So I stayed with my parents, and they released me from CPS, Child Protective Services, for 6 months, and it was it after that. Put me in a program, which I'm currently still going to as a board member. So
that's all right.
It's amazing.
That's all right.
It's crazy how things turn around and you can take your testimony and give it that's to right. somebody else who need it.
Which is what we're doing right now. Yes. Because that my goal and my wish for this show is for, because there are thousands of people who listen to this show.
Yes.
And so my wish is that somebody will hear this and either help someone that they may know or get help for themselves. Yes. So it sounds like to me that the both of you really kind of had to hit rock bottom.
You had yes, to hit rock bottom.
You have to hit rock bottom mm-hmm. in order to get clean. You have to.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a few. Yeah. It's a few that don't have to hit rock bottom. They don't think that they have to hit rock bottom to get clean.
Clean.
But I had to.
I want to talk about prescription drugs because, as we said before, a lot of people think that because they don't do the hard stuff, that they think that, you know, they are not addicted to drugs. But non-medical use and abuse of prescription drugs is a growing health problem in the United States. Annually, more people die from prescribed opiate pain relievers than all illegal drugs combined.
Yes, that's wow. true.
And that's amazing. That's legal access combined with a culture of implicitly trusting doctors' opinions have led to a sharp increase in emergency medicine visits attributable to prescription drugs. Prescription drug abuse may soon be the largest substance abuse problem in America. And as a matter of fact, I saw something recently that says it is the biggest drug problem.
Actually, the people that's on powder, they rather take the pills now. Mm. They're not into the powder. And most of the people that's smoking crack now, they could care less if they get the crack or not. Because as long as they get an Oxycontin or a Percocet, they good.
Wow. ER visits due to prescription drug abuse has doubled in the last 6 years. Overdoses on prescription drugs are the leading cause of drug abuse deaths in the United States. The study in 2012 said that there were 33,175 unintentional drug abuse deaths. 53% were linked to pharmaceutical use, illicit and prescribed. This prescription drug thing, and especially, like, I don't know if you guys saw on HBO, they like do these documentaries all the time.
Yes.
And how these suburban moms
yes.
are strung
out
on prescription drugs.
Wow. Also, these doctors and lawyers are strung
out
on prescription
drugs. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, what I want people to know, because again, I've heard this over and over again. Oh, I might take a pill. You know, I might do some pills, but I'm not.
That's
you know.
A denial. That's yes.
that's exactly
denial.
What it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's
come exactly out of the denial, whoever you are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just
a
I don't know.
A drug is a drug.
A drug is a drug.
And we can get addicted to any kind of drug. I've known people to be addicted to Tylenol PMs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aleve PMs. They got to take 4 or 5.
Not Quill.
Yes, not yeah. Quill.
Mm-hmm. Oh. What is that cough syrup that people used to do? Not the Benadryl, but the other.
Vicks 44 yeah. and yeah. the Romatussin.
A lot of school children yes. get addicted to that. Because
you make meth out of Romatussin.
Oh, I don't what? Know. Do
wow,
really?
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. Wow. You know, I had a friend. I had a roommate one time, and I've never seen drugs in my life. I mean, I've seen weed, but I've never smoked it, but I've seen it. But I've never seen anything up close, more, you know, like cocaine or crack. But there was one thing that I noticed about him was that after a period of time, his mood swings would be like he would go from 0 to 100 in like 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I didn't know that it was, you know, drugs that he was on, but I knew something wasn't right because nobody does that. And because he was such a nice person, I knew that that wasn't him. Well, come to find out, he was in the beginnings
of
cocaine, of a cocaine addiction.
I mean, you know, people mood swings,
Changes in appetite and sleep patterns.
Changes in clothes, changes in hygiene, personal hygiene. It's a lot of things.
Deterioration in personal grooming or physical appearance. Yes.
It's a lot of things that give people, they're not looking for the, looking for to find it, I guess.
Well, what makes a person that smoke crack eat chocolate?
Because it's the sweet. Chocolate keep that high, stimulate that high.
Okay, is that what it is? We snack on everything.
No, you know, sweet.
We always want some.
The nicotine.
That's right.
Makes it make you higher with the crack.
Nicotine. There's no nicotine in chocolate.
No.
Yes, it is. It's something. What is
craving? Craving. It keeps your craving down.
Yeah. Okay, so what in the chocolate that makes you crave? What ingredient that's in it?
Sugar, I guess. I don't know.
It's sugar.
It's nothing in chocolate. What'd you say was in chocolate? What did you say was in chocolate?
I ain't going to say it no more.
Well, I know it's not nicotine.
No, nicotine ain't in chocolate.
Not nicotine. Well, listen, Wendy and Tasha, I certainly appreciate you guys coming and telling your story. But that's all the time that we have for today. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Toodaloo.
Bye.